Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. Today I'll be talking with three-time Tony nominee Lewis Stadlin, who plays Horace Vandergelder in the SHN production of Hello, Dolly, which is starring the Tony Award-winning Broadway legend, Betty Buckley. I'll talk with African-American Yiddish opera singer Anthony Mordecai Zvi Russell. He's going to be performing at the JCC East Bay tonight in honor of African History Month and to present his new album, Convergence Revisited, which creates a new musical idiom by combining two distinct older ones. You'll learn about that shortly. From the San Francisco Symphony, I'll talk with guest conductor Manfred Honeck, who is at the helm of this weekend's performances of Strauss Waltzes, along with the Schumann Piano Concerto, performed by pianist Lars Vogt. And a talk with Grammy Award-winning choral conductor Ragnar Bolin and young Swedish composer Jakob Mulrad about their upcoming concerts this weekend of Capella SF, which will feature music composed in the last 20 years by Swedish and American choral composers. Stay with us. That's the beautiful voice of my first guest, Anthony Mordecai Zvi Russell. He's featured in a concert called Convergence Revisited with the klezmer group Voretsky Pass tonight at 7 o'clock at the JCC East Bay Berkeley branch on Walnut Street. Drawing from a diverse collection of folk songs, anthems, lullabies, art, and religious music, Convergence mobilizes an array of his historic genres to evoke a multi-diasporic sound, including early blues, Hungarian, Bessarabian, klezmer, and more we'll learn about shortly. Some 12 years after making his professional operatic debut in the world premiere of Philip Glass's Appomattox with the San Francisco Opera, Anthony is now a vocalist, composer, and arranger specializing in Yiddish song. His work in Jewish music has brought him to stages around the world. He currently lives in Massachusetts with his husband of 3 years, Rabbi Michael Rothbaum, in Acton, Massachusetts. Anthony, welcome to Open Air.
Thank you so much for having me.
And a beautiful sound, which we're going to hear more of shortly. Let's start with your background. Now, in the world of theater, a triple threat is positively described as someone who can sing, act, and dance.
Right.
But for you, would have to say these three are gay, Black, American, and Jewish. So where should we start?
I would like to think of them as a virtue more than a threat, but you know.
As is acting, singing, and dancing. So that's the oxymoron. Mm-hmm. Tell us about your background a little bit. Were you raised in the Jewish faith?
I wasn't, actually. I was raised in the Christian faith, especially on my mother's side. I come from very religious people. So when I did decide that I was interested in converting to Judaism, I already had kind of a basis in the foundational texts of Judaism, the Torah, the first five books of the Bible. Also, speaking kind of family influences, my mother was a musician. She was a concert pianist. So my eventual interest in classical music, I think, comes primarily from her.
Uh-huh. So the religious background, how was your mother's reaction to your changing of faith?
You know, people always want a story. You know, they want to hear that, you know, my parents were Black Panthers, and I told them that I was going to become Jewish, and, you know, then they, you know, kicked me out of the house, and then I was taken in by a Chabad house, and, you know, that's how I became Jewish. But it was very, very simple. I remember texting her immediately after kind of the ceremony of becoming Jewish was over, and she said that she was proud of me and that she hoped that the Jewish people would treat her baby well.
Oh, how sweet.
Something to which I try to hold them to on a regular basis.
That's true. Okay, well, let's talk about how you first discovered these various genres that you're reincorporating into a new form. Mm. When did you first expose to one of the types of music? Let's start with the African influence.
Well, for an African-American classical singer, the Negro spiritual is always going to be an element of the performance rep, just because, you know, there's this very long history of African-American classical singers singing this repertoire. So I was already familiar with the repertoire of spirituals, but it was something that when I was an opera singer, I tended to ignore because I wanted to be defined by my choices repertoire-wise. I didn't want to be defined by who I was or who I was perceived to be. And it was interesting that only after leaving conventional classical music and moving on to Yiddish that I actually came back to spirituals as a way of, in a sense, coming back to a musical part of myself.
Mm-hmm. And incorporating, when you're working with Vretsky Pass on
Yes.
this group. So how did you guys first cross paths?
So I was at a music festival in Toronto called the Ashkenaz Festival. It happens every other year in the summer. And we were both on the festival. It was one of my first outings as a performer of Yiddish. And I went to a concert of theirs, and I was absolutely astounded by their musicality and their sound. I had never really heard anybody who had applied their particular kind of playing to Ashkenazi Jewish music. So I sat through this concert absolutely dumbfounded, and when it was over, I ran right up to the fiddle player, Cookie Siegelstein, and I said, "Oh my God, that's the most amazing thing I've ever heard. Where are you guys based?" And she said, "Oh, we're based out of Berkeley." And I said, "I'm moving to Oakland in 2 weeks." And she said, "Great, I'll see you there."
And you did.
I did. Yeah, they were, have been and continue to be a group with which I've collaborated with creatively over the past, like, 5 to 7 years. Mm-hmm. So I was very lucky, you know, to come to a place where they were.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's hear more of your wonderful voice, and then we'll continue my conversation with Anthony Mordecai Zvi Russell. We're going to hear Rosie. Tell us about Rosie.
So Rosie is an unusual song. It combines two elements, as most of the pieces of music on this EP do. The first element is a prison work song from the Parchman's Penitentiary Workman's Camp. And in the song, the singer is asking the person that they love to remember them so that when they get out of prison, they can wed. So in a sense, it's a very hard and very rhythmic song, but the words are very tender because it's asking this person on the outside to remember them. I've paired this with melodic elements from a traditional Yiddish song that was originally sung to wedding couples as they were coming home from the wedding. And what I wanted to do was to create an image of this woman who was supposed to remember this prisoner. I wanted to create a musical image of who that was. So I used the Jewish material to stand in for this woman who was supposed to remember this prisoner. And I have the prisoner's music to stand in for the prisoner.
Let's hear it. Music performed by Anthony Russell.
Thank you. famous girl you made to me won't got married till I go free.
Mordecai Zvi Russell's work called Rosie. Fascinating work there. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
So tell me how and actually why you're combining these rather than presenting them as they are in their original forms.
These kinds of music existed simultaneously but in very different geographical spaces. And yet, socially, I think their uses were very similar. I wanted to create a space where the respective traditions of work songs, religious music, lullabies, anthems could exist together and, in a sense, have a dialogue between their respective texts. So in putting together this project, I worked very hard to try to find texts that I felt were in conversation with each other and that kind of developed along the same themes. I wanted kind of these two respective histories, in a sense, to sing to each other.
Hmm. Tell us a little bit more then about how tonight's program came together and how Vretsky Vaz's participation in it congealed.
Well, the nice thing about tonight's program is that it's in the exact same place where this project premiered in 2014. And, you know, as a project, you know, this idea of combining Ashkenazi, Jewish, and African-American music, it can seem strange or unusual or doesn't necessarily make a whole lot of sense. So I was very lucky that the JCC decided to kind of take a chance on me and put this on the program of the Jewish Music Festival that year in 2014. And this concert is a way for us to kind of put what happened that night back into a sort of context to kind of see, like, what's happened since then, what has been the response of the world to this project, which kind of started in this exact same place, you know, several years ago. Mm. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Well, as should audiences now, let's have we're gonna have a little sneak preview of one of the works that's being performed tonight, Stranger, Anthony Mordecai Zvi Russell, along with Varetsky Pass at the Berkeley branch of the JCC East Bay on Walnut Street tonight at 8. Let's have a listen. Thank you for coming in, Anthony.
My pleasure.
I'm just a poor wayfaring stranger.
A little sneak preview of Anthony Mordecai Zvi Russell's work that'll be performed tonight at JCC East Bay, jcceastbay.org, for more information. And for more information about what's going on with Anthony, check out his website, which is anthonyrussellbass.com. That's music of Eric Whitaker. Leonardo dreams of his flying machine. From the release of the Capella SF Choral Group, Timeless, 10 Centuries of Music, Ragnar Bolin, Artistic Director. I'm pleased to let you know about the next Capella SF concerts this Saturday in Berkeley and Sunday here in San Francisco, and to invite Choral Director Ragnar Bolin and Swedish composer Jacob Mulrad to give us some details. This is a concert with works all written in the last 20 years by five living composers, with two world premieres and a U.S. premiere, that of Jacob's piece called Time. And the concert's entitled Unveiling Glorious New Music from Sweden and America. Ragnar Bolin founded the professional chamber choir Capella SF in 2014 and began his tenure as chorus director of the San Francisco Symphony in March 2007. Some 3 years later, the symphony and chorus garnered three Grammy Awards for their recording of Mahler's Eighth Symphony, including for Best Choral Performance under Ragnar's direction. Ragnar is also conductor of, in his capacity of the San Francisco Symphony, just recently prepared the chorus for the San Francisco Symphony premiere performances last week of Mendelssohn's Lobgesang, conducted by Andras Schiff. Congratulations on that, and welcome once again to our airwaves, Ragnar Bolin.
Thank you so much.
Jacob made his Carnegie debut with his work Pan, inspired by the god in Greek mythology, has produced work for Berwald Hallen, the Swedish Radio Choir, the Royal Stockholm Philharmonic, and the Swedish Radio Symphony. He is the youngest composer to have gotten a piece performed at the Royal Swedish Opera, and we certainly welcome him to our open airwaves. Jacob, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Happy to have you here. Ragnar, let's talk about how this program came together and the composers that are represented in the program. We heard a little taste of Eric Whitaker. We'll be hearing his work, When David Heard. Well, maybe start with Eric's piece.
Yes. Well, as you know, Capella SF, our mission is to bring music from all epochs to the Bay Area, a cappella, classics, masterpieces from all times, but also contemporary music. So this is focusing on the contemporary part, and the contemporary choral music has always been a very strong vein in my career. That's what touched me the most as a young chorister singing under Eric Erickson, singing pieces by Ligeti and other contemporary composers. So this program excites me very much, and we're starting out, as you said, with Eric Whitaker's When David Heard, which is a standout in his production in that it doesn't really resemble any of his other pieces, and he himself refers to it as probably his most personal piece. The text is, of course, deeply tragic about David, King David, losing his son Absalom. And Whitaker strikes a vein here that is very, very poignant and touching. And as Whitaker himself also said afterwards, he didn't realize that the most prominent feature in the piece was perhaps the pauses, that the electrified pauses in between these outbursts of grief.
Mm-hmm. Let's involve our guest composer here, Jacob, as you prefer in America, Jacob Mulrad, a young Swedish composer. Thanks for coming out. And how long are you staying here in San Francisco?
Actually, I'm here for all the week, so I'm really looking forward.
First time out, or...?
First time in San Francisco, so yeah.
What do you think so far?
So far, so very good.
Oh,
and
good.
It's fantastic to see how the art music is blossoming here in U.S. and in San Francisco, also through Ragnar. So it's a pleasure.
Mm. Tell us about your work, Time. First of all, I was reading in your bio that you grew up with a degree of dyslexia. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. So I have kind of severe dyslexia, which makes it hard to read and write, but also read and write music. It's always a problem to interpret symbols at all kind. So when I wrote my piece Time, I just wanted to work a bit conceptual. My favorite musical parameter is timbre. So I wanted to translate one word into all the world's languages, and I chose the word time. I wanted to organize the sound of the different words in a certain way that you really don't really notice how it goes from one language to another.
when I wrote this, I was also very inspired by the story of Babylon's tower, the tower up to God, when the humans were about to build this sacred like tower to God, and he was kind of terrified and wanted to stop the humans from succeeding, and how to stop the humans, he kind of created all the languages in the world to stop us from communicating with each other. So I think this was kind of a cruel thing to do.
I was going to say, thanks a lot, God.
Yeah, exactly. So, from one point of view, I wanted to perhaps not connect all the languages in the world in one language, rather connecting them into one word, and that word is time.
I think you mentioned in I read that you used time in some 30 different languages. Is that correct?
Yeah, I translated. I used actually Google Translate too, and they had like 104 translations on the word time, and so I also said to myself, I'm not to use more than what's necessary. So I think it was sufficient to use this 27 versions of time.
I'm sure Ragnar feels that way. having conducted choruses in multi languages, safe to say this is the first time you've had to conduct in 30 languages in one piece?
Yes. It's a special challenge, actually, to shift quickly from French to German to Danish, back and forth, because singers' mindset is that we sort of lock into one idiom and then stay there. So
it takes someone with a black belt in conducting, shall I say.
Yeah, for sure.
I should mention that Ragnar is a gifted... is it black belt that you have now in
Aikido.
Aikido.
Watch out.
he wears the belt when he conducts, I think, on this one.
Yeah.
So we'll hear some of your music in a moment, Jacob, but let's talk about who else is represented on the program.
Yes.
Five world premieres? Amazing assortment.
Yes, so we're very excited and honored that to have David Conti as our composer in residence since we were founded in 2015. And from, I think it was our second production, that we premiered two madrigals for the seasons, A Summer's Day and Autumn. And now there's the completion of that. David has completed them, these madrigals, with Snowflakes, which is about winter and spring. And he has the most keen ear and eye for beautiful poetry, and so we're very. That's a world premiere. Those winter and spring is a world premiere.
We should mention that David will be my guest next week on Open Air, so we'll be sure to talk about that and ask him how the concert went.
Wonderful, and it's also fascinating that we're ending the program with these two pieces: David Conti's Madrigals for the Season and Jakob's Time. And those two pieces in our program couldn't be more contrasting. David's tonal language is, especially in these madrigals, very much influenced by French music. As you know, he studied with Nadia Boulanger and still has deep ties with France. And you can definitely hear these influences in these madrigals.
Mm-hmm. And who else is represented? I see a composer completely unfamiliar, two composers completely unfamiliar to me.
So Carlo Nandeskarin, a famous singer in Sweden and composer, has several commissions from the radio choir, well-established opera singer and oratorio singer. I collaborated with him in several oratorios back in the day when I was still in Sweden. So here's one of his five motets, number five, Djupt under dagens yta, deeply under the surface of the day. It's a very mystical text about a vision of ecological disaster, but also hopeful about God and creation. Mm-hmm. And then there's Fredrik Sixten, that I've collaborated with many times and premiered several of his pieces. And here is a reworking of a piece that he wrote a couple of years ago called Seek Him, from a text from the Book of Amos, the Old Testament. And he rewrote it to the point where he actually labels it a new composition. So he pulled the other version, and we're now world premiering this version.
Fantastic. Which brings us back to Jacob Mulrad's piece, Time. I should mention that KLW is a media sponsor for the Capella SF concerts. You've been probably hearing our announcements over these past several weeks. The concerts are in Berkeley on Saturday and Sunday here in San Francisco. Several websites I'll point you to, and that will be at our website to guide you onto that. Before we talk further about your piece, are we going to hear an excerpt from Time, or are we going to hear something else of yours?
Yeah, sure. We're going to hear
Time. But before we do that, just a little bit about your further background. You're a grandchild of a Holocaust survivor.
Yes.
And how have those stories perhaps figured into your upbringing or your music?
Last year I wrote a piece called Kaddish, which is the prayer, the morning prayer of the dead. I built that piece on an imaginary conversation between me and my grandfather who survived, because of that I didn't have the time to ask all of these important questions. I used his testimonials that he gave when he was alive to use that text material, and from it I asked questions, and that was the structure of that piece. So in that piece, I told his story about how he survived both Auschwitz and Bergen-Belsen, which is, yeah.
And also, I mentioned in the introduction, a youngest composer to be performed by the Swedish Opera, is that correct?
Yeah, I wrote a ballet for them when I was, I think, 20 or 21.
Well,
so
keep on keeping on. We'll look forward to your music. More about what Jacob is up to is at jacobmulrad.se. That's Jacob, JacobMulrad.se. Capella SF, capellasf.org. And what Ragnar is up to in his many endeavors, ragnarbolin.com. Those links are at our open air website. Check it out after our broadcast. So, Jacob, set up for what we're going to hear from the work Time.
The thing that we're going to hear is like a musical foreword. It's a hymn from King David about how do we know that God exists. And he says that when you see, because of that we see the moon and the stars and the sun every day,
Fortunately, we have a Swedish translator with us.
Bevis. Proof. It's proof evidence. Enough of his existence. And I think it's the same for music and art itself, that we don't need to talk about why we need it for. It's just by its own existence that we know it's important. So that's what we're going to hear.
Thanks for coming in, Jacob Mulrad, Ragnar, as always.
Thank you.
And now music from Jacob Mulrad's Time, having its U.S. premiere this weekend with Capella SF. From Jacob Mulrad's Time. I said goodbye to Ragnar and Jacob, but going off mic. There's so much more we have to say about this. It was from last November's world premiere that Ragnar conducted. Tell us just a little bit more about that amazing performance.
Yeah, so I was doing this production with the radio choir last November in Sweden, and having the great, exciting honor to premiere Jakob's Time, and it was a huge success. But it was also extra exciting for me to now have the reverse role of becoming ambassador for American choral music to Sweden. So I brought with me to that program Mason Bates' Amazing Sirens and Stacey Garup's Give Me Hunger, and a piece by Eric Banks called By an Open Window. And these were American choral pieces that I knew that the Swedish choral music scene did not know about. And they really took well to that as well.
Mm, well, look forward to this weekend's performance, Saturday in Berkeley, Sunday in San Francisco, capellasf.org. We'll have links at our website. Again, thank you again, gentlemen, for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Of course. And now, as they say, for something completely different.
Put on your Sunday clothes, there's lots of world out there. Get out the brilliantine and dime cigars. We're gonna find adventure in the evening air. Girls in white in a perfume night, where the lights are bright as the stars. Put on your Sunday clothes, we're gonna ride through town in one of those new horse-drawn open cars. We'll see the shows at Delmonico's, and we'll close the town in a whirl, and we won't come home until we've kissed a girl. Put on your Sunday clothes when you feel down and out.
Music from the iconic score by Jerry Herman to Hello, Dolly, Put on Your Sunday Clothes. An incredible delight to hear and see on the stage of the Golden Gate Theater last night in full live Technicolor splendor, thanks to the eye-popping palette that costumer Santo Loquasto, who received the 2017 Tony Award for Best Costume Design for this musical, Hello, Dolly. The center of attention, of course, Dolly Levi, is being played by Broadway veteran and Tony Award-winning actress Betty Buckley, and someone that should have equal billing, I think. How about Hello, Dolly, Hi There, Horace, perhaps as a new headliner. My guest is Louis Stadlin, who plays the widowed dry goods proprietor Horace Vandergelder, who engages Ms. Dolly Levi's services as matchmaker, among her many other talents, to find a new wife. Spoiler alert, Dolly has her eyes on Horace, who eventually succumbs to her charms. It was such a pleasure to watch Louis as Horace, a role that suits him to a T, or perhaps maybe to a D, as in Dolly. Louis received Tony nominations for his roles in A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum and Candide, with memorable Broadway appearances in The Producers, 45 Seconds from Broadway, The Man Who Came to Dinner, Laughter on the 23rd Floor, The Sunshine Boys, and Minnie's Boys, for which he also received the Drama Desk Award, Outer Critics Circle, and a Theater World Award. He starred in the national tours of The Producers, Guys and Dolls, The Time of Your Life, and Fiddler on the Roof, as well as Laughter. On film, he was in The Verdict, Serpico, and To Be or Not to Be, as well as In and Out, and was Dr. Freed on HBO's The Sopranos. Hello, Louis.
Hello. Hello, David.
I didn't realize that this was based on a Thornton Wilder play from 1954 called The Matchmaker. Perchance, did you go to that original source for some character development?
I actually played Horace Vandergelder in The Matchmaker.
Fantastic.
With Andrea Martin. At Williamstown. That was the first time I ever played Horace Vandergelder. And it's very different. As a matter of fact, I think that even though that's the source material and it's a wonderful play, I think as a stage piece, Hello, Dolly is even more effective. So I wrapped that was my virgin experience with Horace Vandergelder. A piece. Horace Vandergelder and Dolly Levi are of equal importance in Hello, Dolly. It's, you know, it's about the journey of Dolly Levi more than Horace.
Mm, indeed. You have such an amazingly beautiful range of emotion in your spoken voice. Perhaps you could offer us your part, or at least part of your opening monologue, to give our radio audience a little taste of your character.
All right, I'll try. It's so hard to do this out of sequence. 99% of the people in this world are fools, and the rest of us are in great danger of contamination. Why, even I was once young, which was foolish. I fell in love, which was foolish. When I got married, which was foolish. And I was poor, which is more foolish than all the other things put together. Then my wife died, which was foolish of her. I grew older, which was sensible of me, and became rich, friendless, and mean, which in Yonkers is about as far as you can go.
That's wonderful. It seems like you're almost channeling Walter Matthau and Jimmy Durante at the same time there. Who were your icons growing up, and what led you to the Great White Way?
Well, my father was an actor, and really when I look back at 52 years in show business, I really am an amalgam of all the character actors that brought me joy, which includes the gentleman that you mentioned. I'm certainly channeling David Burns, who originated the role of Horace Vandegelder in Hello, Dolly. There's Eddie Mayoff. There's Frank Morgan. There's W.C. Fields. There's anybody who's given me pleasure in my life.
Indeed. You channel them all wonderfully. Now, this is not your first national tour, as I mentioned in the introduction. Is there a different mindset you've got to take in to perhaps be doing these shows night after night? And are you perhaps, given your veteran status, acting as a mentor to some of the younger bucks in the cast?
I am. You know, you start off in this business and you're the youngest person in the show. And now I'm the oldest person in the show. I don't think that I'm not consciously trying to mentor people, but I lead by example. I have not missed any of the 141 performances that we've done. One of the things that I'm proudest about this production of Hello, Dolly! Is there's not a dog in the group. I mean, everybody is just giving 100% all the time.
I should mention, again, spoiler, there is a horse.
There is a horse, and there is a train. Yes.
Your incredible cast you are working with. I mean, just the dancing chops involved is amazing. And then you have someone like a memorable Cornelius played by Nick Rolo. That boy has got some voice.
He's
chops.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And Betty, I'll tell you.
By the way.
being on the road for a year or doing Hello, Dolly! On Broadway, if you don't have real affection and respect for the woman who's playing Dolly Levi, it could be an agony. And I adore Betty, and I think that without sounding like I'm blowing my own horn, I think what Betty and I have in this production that I don't think I've seen in any other production is you really do believe that the two of us love each other and are destined for one another when that is how the play concludes. And I think that's true of all the people who find love. Because if Hello, Dolly! Is about anything, it's about people finding love within the space of 24 hours.
Mm-hmm. And thanks to the infectious score of Jerry Herman, Hello, Dolly! Written in 1964, hard to believe. MAME 2 years later, also Mac and Mabel, La Cage aux Faux, still going strong at 87. Good for him.
Yeah.
I mentioned that Nick Rolo, who plays Cornelius, recently finished 2,500 performances in the Book of Mormon. Talk about that kind of, you got to do it every night. That's a pretty amazing thing. And the voice is just tremendous. He was also on the Book of Mormon in Chicago and on the National Tour and in the West End. A bunch of stories must come from those cast members, I'm sure.
Well, you'll have to have him on the show, and he'll tell them to you. I wasn't in London at the time. I was nowhere near Parsons Boulevard at the time.
Betty Buckley starring as Hello, Dolly, as Dolly in Hello, Dolly! At the Golden Gate Theater. Lewis Stadlin and a memorable role as Horace. Night after night, keep on keeping on, my friend, and come back to San Francisco soon. Where do you head from San Francisco?
We go to Las Vegas, and then we go to Denver. And the show's been booked for a couple of years. My contract is up on August 25th.
Uh-huh. Well, keep it up. Thanks, you, Lewis, for coming.
Thank you.
hello, darling. It's so nice to have you here where you belong. I never knew, darling, without you, darling. Life was awfully flat, and more than that was awfully wrong.
I'm staying where I'm at, Horace. Dolly, you'll never go away.
Wonderful woman.
Again.
From the new Broadway cast recording, that was Bette Midler and Company, starting off with David Hyde Pierce in Hello, Dolly. Hello, Dolly at the Golden Gate Theater, shnsf.com for information. Hello, Dolly on Broadway.com. Again, these links will be at our website, kalw.org. Look for Open Air or just search for Hello, Dolly, and that'll come up there after the show. Well, due to the withdrawal, due to injury of guest conductor Daniel Harding scheduled, the symphony turned to the tried and true conductor of the Pittsburgh Symphony, Manfred Honeck, for a return engagement following his appearance this past fall. Concerts tomorrow and Saturday at 8 and Sunday at 2 bring a touch of Vienna to the stage with a healthy helping of Strauss waltzes. To perhaps ring in the Chinese New Year, maybe. And the formidable piano concerto of Robert Schumann, played by German pianist Lars Vogt. Spoiler alert, after a rehearsal which concluded with a discussion of who in the orchestra will open umbrellas at key points during the thunder and lightning polka, how loud the gunshot should sound, and where among the organ pipes the feathers should fly from. In the On the Hunt polka, I caught up with the maestro at Davies Symphony Hall yesterday. Apologies for the field recording quality and noises from adjacent Grove Street trucks. Maestro, welcome back to Davies Symphony Hall.
I'm so happy to be in with a wonderful orchestra and friends here in San Francisco.
Well, there's such a wealth of material to choose from the whole library of Johann Strauss Jr. Do the ones that you've chosen for this program have a certain resonance with you?
Yes, I'm a fan of nature, and these pieces which I have selected from all the pieces Johann Strauss and Joseph Strauss has written is connected with nature. You hear waltz voices of spring, you will have polka, Francaise, in Kraftmalle where you hear a bird and a cuckoo, hunting polka, you will have polka, dragonfly, all pieces which are connected to the nature. And Johann Strauss himself also experienced in his countryside visited in Vienna.
It almost seems like you're auditioning for the next New Year's Day concerts.
Oh, well, I do this already 30 years. And I love Johann Strauss very much. It's such a wonderful music and stylistical, always a challenge, but it's so great to play this music.
Well, the world of classical music remains a bastion of stereotypes, and so it remains that a Viennese-trained musician would bring a unique insight to your interpretations. The music is in your blood, as you say. Does that really still hold true?
Well, I mean, this music is definitely connected with Vienna, and I was living in Vienna a long time, and therefore, of course, you are trained in this culture. But I would say that this music is so good that everybody in the world can understand it as long as you are practicing and be educated in that that style.
In the same breath, you're growing up with this music in the far western end of Austria, surrounded by Germany, Switzerland, and Italy, but still bringing, with the training you had in Vienna, a certain way of playing that is perhaps foreign to an American orchestra or something that you have more innately.
indeed, one of the facts, I had a teacher who was playing in Vienna Philharmonic, and when I personally was hired by the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra as a viola player, of course, I played all this music in the New Year's concert, and therefore you learned it also. So, in fact, this was the best school for me and as a preparation for as a conductor. And it is, for me, one thing is enormously important, is time of rubato, time of portamenti, and time of changing tempo, and be flexible. And Johann Strauss music requires everything of this. And it enormous influence on Gustav Mahler, Anton Bruckner, Brahms, where we believe this music is has to be like written, but we forget sometimes that even this kind type of music is enormous important to play with a lot of freedom, like they did in 100 years ago. I would say to conduct Gustav Mahler without knowing Johann Strauss pieces is nearly impossible.
Also on the program is the meat of the program, so to speak, is the Schumann piano concerto, his sole piano concerto from 1854. Tell me your own relationship with this ultimately very troubled composer, and have you worked with the soloist before?
I have worked with Lars Vogt quite often. He's a wonderful and marvelous pianist who has a power on the piano, but also can play very, very lyrical. I'm really looking forward to make music this German composer. Schumann is always very special for me. He incorporates the tradition coming out from Beethoven, of course, and especially Schubert. I would say Schumann is in a succession of these two composers, but is not still Brahms, is not still the heavy, the high romantic period. So I always treat Schumann like a Beethoven, like a classic, Viennese classic type of interpretation. And I think that's very important to get the transparency and lightness, as well as looking already deep into the end of the 19th century. That makes, for me personally, Schumann enormously difficult and challenging to find the two colors, the classic colors and the romantic color.
You've been conductor of the Pittsburgh Symphony since 2008 and just reappointed. Congratulations on the 2018 Grammy for the Shostakovich Fifth Symphony with the Barbara Adagio, and I should give a second shout-out to engineer Mark Donahue for winning the Grammy for engineering that recording. And you'll be taking the Pittsburgh on a tour in Europe this coming fall. How well do they speak Viennese, and have you taught them to waltz, so to speak?
I started in Pittsburgh in 2008, and after 11 years now that the orchestra easily plays in this style, because the things are repeating, even if it's different music, but it repeats the style and the way of playing, and it's already in their blood, I would say. And when we go on tour with the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra now this coming autumn, we will be also in Vienna, and we will play Bruckner and Mozart and also Beethoven, and we will definitely also train the orchestra in this kind of style. Even Bruckner requires a lot of freedom and rubato playing, like Johann Strauss is doing. Of course, a different world, and there's also the sacred world, and Bruckner is enormously required, but there's a lot of elements where we know he was influenced by the Strauss family. So the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra is here already and in this path.
Your repertoire is solidly European. With your training, is being at the helm of an American orchestra giving you an opportunity to explore some more contemporary music and American music? I see that for your 60th birthday, Mason Bates wrote a piece for you, a good friend of mine, and he tailored something particularly for you. But are you looking forward to exploring more contemporary music than you would necessarily have at the head of a European orchestra?
I think it is important to support a contemporary composer, and Mason Bates is one of the really upcoming and heroes, I would say. I really love him, and his piece, Resurrected, he wrote for me, is a wonderful piece. but also James McMillan, Oriza Mali, a Pittsburgh-based composer. We have to do this. We have to support our composers. They are living in our time, and they also feel our time, and I think it's worth to do it. Like it was 100 years ago, people supported Brahms and Bruckner and Mahler. Let's do it now also nowadays.
Mm-hmm. It was wonderful to see some of the photos of your celebration of the 60th birthday with your family. Six children. Do they have any opportunity to spend any time in Pittsburgh, or are they solidly based in Europe?
They are all based in Europe, of course. They visit me hopefully one time in a year. I would like to have them more around me, but it's the life of a conductor. We are always in aeroplanes or in hotels. But I enjoy to have such a big family. I have now also 8 grandchildren.
But a conductor is always young at heart, that's for sure, and it keeps you young.
Conducting is a healthy profession. I move my arms, and I'm thankful for that. But most important is, of course, that your spirit and your emotions, your soul is always together with the music, and that keeps you also young.
Well, we're glad we could lasso you back to San Francisco to bring a little bit of New Year's to our dreary, cold San Francisco nights.
It's a joy to be here, and I'm so pleased with the orchestra. They are so wonderful musicians, and very quickly in transmitting all the requests I have. So it's a great orchestra, fantastic orchestra.
Thanks for taking some time today.
Absolutely, it's a joy to be here.
Music of Strauss to take us out. Grab a glass of champagne in the lobby for a belated toast to either the year 2019 or the year of the pig. And I'll see you at Davies Symphony Hall tomorrow night at 8. Performances also on Saturday at 8 and Sunday at 2. Lars Vogt is the guest pianist for Schumann's piano concerto, Strauss Waltzes, and the Poet and Peasant Overture of von Suppe with guest conductor Manfred Onek. Details at sfsymphony.org. Voices of Spring Waltz by Johann and Josef Strauss, part of the San Francisco Symphony's concerts these next several days. And music that, as light and carefree and easy as it sounds, having witnessed the rehearsal, there's an awful lot of subtlety that goes into making the musicians perform in the true Viennese spirit. And who better than Austrian conductor Manfred Onek to lead the forces again. Tomorrow night and Saturday at 8, Sunday at 2, in Davies Symphony Hall, the San Francisco Symphony. Next week on Open Air, I'll talk with composer David Conte, the aforementioned composer who's featured in Capella SF this weekend. with violinist Anna Pressler, who is artistic director of the Left Coast Chamber Ensemble. We'll talk about their upcoming concerts, which will feature David Conte's Clarinet Sonata, part of the Kurt Rohde Farewell Tour, as Kurt is moving on from his position as artistic advisor. I'll also talk with Melissa Carey about the production of the musical Bullets Over Broadway at the Foothill Music Theater in Los Altos, and cast members of the musical Hamilton will be in the studio. Peter Robinson will shine his unique light on cultural affairs as well next week on Open Air. I'm David LaTulipe. A reminder that Open Air is archived at kalw.org. My thanks to Niels Swinkels for producing the show. And if you've got a show suggestion, we'll try to fit you in. David at kalw.org. Now let's go out with a little bit more Strauss. Why not?